This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World Resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer. Hi, this is Len Testa. I'm here with Jim Hill. We're doing another episode of the Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World Disney Dish with Jim Hill podcast. And today we're going to be covering the Epcot Resorts. You could tell from the saxophone playing in the background that we must be over by Disney's Boardwalk Inn. Jim, it's a lovely day to be here on the boardwalk.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, gray has stopped raining or is about to rain. I can never decide.
That's right. And it's so we're starting over here in the very end of the boardwalk over by the ESPN Club, where Jim and I just enjoyed a delicious lunch of things filled with barbecue sauce and nachos.
I think mine had brie in it. I'm not sure.
Brie?
Brie.
What?
I thought a turkey club, but it had brie in it.
So. We won't tell anyone about that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Right. Keep it to yourselves, guys.
There we go.
All right. So we're walking past the boardwalk bakery right now. Have you ever been in there?
Yeah. I love the what they've done with this area. Again, it's just nice, low key. Has great individual shops.
Hey, they do really well with it. Have you been to Cat Cora, the restaurant?
Not since the redo, no. So
that's fabulous. Actually, it's really good. The desserts are pretty good. Mm. They do one dish in particular. It's supposed to be fairly popular. It's chicken with cinnamon. So it's one of those two. You get one of two reactions from people on this. It's they either love it or they hate it. And the reason why they hate it, invariably people say, cinnamon is typically something that they associate with desserts.
Yes.
Not with entrees.
Right. Okay.
That's right. So, and that's the thing right there.
Chicken, cinnamon. Okay. Yeah. Peanut butter, chocolate. Okay.
But the appetizers and desserts are fabulous.
All right. Well, sure. Because they have cinnamon chicken in them.
Exactly. All right. We're walking past Seashore Sweets Candy. And then past a Flying Fish. I really like Flying Fish. Have you been there recently?
No. I was there, just as it initially opened here at the resort. But again, this is, 96 when this first opened?
Yeah. They have a chef's table back there now.
Do they now?
Yeah. It's actually not like the chef's table of Victoria and Albert's. It's more a table that sort of overlooks the kitchen. Mm-hmm. It's kind of easier to get into. They've combined it with a bar as well.
Hmm. All right, we'll have to try that at some point.
What do you think about the Boardwalk Inn? We're walking in the boardwalk has a U-shaped area that faces the lake. We're kind of walking back through that now.
Well, this resort occupies kind of a weird spot because in its earliest iteration, this was literally supposed to be a boardwalk. This was supposed to be a nighttime entertainment district. You'd come here. This was at one point considered to be sort of the corporate companion for Pleasure Island, that people who were, spending their day in the convention center over at Dolphin of the Swan or across the way at, the Yacht and Beach, this is where they'd go, to unwind. They could ride the wooden roller coaster or the Tilt-A-Whirl or, go to the restaurants like, Walt's Attic. Which, was going to be a fascinating eatery. It was that they were going to, join forces with the Disney Archive and, pull all of these pieces out. But the idea literally was this restaurant full of mismatched furniture, but you'd be sitting there, dining next to, the Seven Dwarves, Academy Award.
Wow. Wait, so the idea was not to put a hotel here? It was just going to be
boardwalk? No, it was a legitimate boardwalk with some fascinating restaurants. They were going to do, for example, sort of a Hollywood dinner, supper club kind of a show built around The Little Mermaid.
A supper club? You never see supper clubs anymore.
Well, this was the whole notion. You'd literally sit in a giant leather banquette and, performers would come out on stage and, do, these immense production numbers of, Under the Sea and, Poor Unfortunate Soul and all that.
Wow.
It was really, really quite ambitious. Though, honestly, my favorite out of everything they were going to do, and this is, one of those great what-ifs of Walt Disney World was they were going to do the family reunion restaurant. And the gimmick of this was, this is where, if you weren't working at the Adventurers Club, this is where the improv actors would go. and literally, you know, the idea was, in fact, we're coming up to the area approximately where it was going to be, that, you know, in between Walt's attic and the Under the Sea Club, there'd been a little sort of step down, almost looking like, you know, it's kind of the entrance to the Congregational Church basement hall meeting area. And, you know, a little, you know, tumble down center front family reunion. And you walked in, and there, you know, I mean, we've all been in this place. It's a little sliding door coat rack thing right the next. And there's somebody sitting there at a card table. Only it's, you know, it's a 300-pound man dressed in drag with a beehive hairdo who's your fat aunt. And yes. It's like, oh, my God, Len, you made it. Oh, we were so worried about you. We heard the car broke down on the throughway. And proceeds to, now, you know, I'm going to give you the name tag because, of course, your cousins are very forgetful. And, you know, proceeds to give you the name tag and send you into the room. And it's like, you're at the family reunion. Everyone there is a member of your family.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And, but again, you are now, it's the church supper. You are eating food that is sitting on a long table in Pyrex Formica dishes, all right? And meanwhile, here are your six relatives that are actors. You know, the sleazy cousin who's trying to sell you, you know, insurance or Amway or some such. You know, they did it as a concept down here, and people just loved it. They thought it was amazing. And it, you know, it was ready to go. And then, but you have to understand, this idea predated Pleasure Island. And then Pleasure Island opened. And then Pleasure Island became a lot harder to operate than anybody had initially anticipated.
Because?
Well, you know, think about it. For the longest time, people would go sample the clubs and then leave. It was, you know, they had to actually come up with that gimmick of every night is New Year's Eve, so you have to stay to see the special New Year's Eve thing. Likewise, Dick Nunes, they weren't really happy about what happened when people on Disney property drank and got in their cars and drove.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, there were a number of pretty spectacular accidents that, because they happened on Disney property prior to the age of the internet and, you know, cell phones, didn't get out into the world. Disney was able to, you know, they comped a lot of hotel rooms, they picked up a lot of hospital bills, but at that point it's like, we don't need, you know,
more drinking and driving.
We don't need more drinking and driving, so this just, it fell by the wayside.
That's a shame, too, because that sounds like a great concept.
Oh, it was.
It'd be very personalized. I mean, it's sort of the thing that they're returning to now with a lot of the next-gen stuff.
Well, it's one of the reasons I keep bringing it up with the hope that somebody will go, oh, yeah!
I remember that idea. Where's that? Bring me the file.
That's right. Well, you know, again, that idea should come back, particularly now that the Adventures Club is gone.
That's true. We walked past the Disney Vacation Club place for Boardwalk Villas. I actually like Boardwalk. It's sort of, for me, it's sort of in the middle tier of Epcot Resorts. I think I'd rather stay here if the price is the same versus like the Swan or Dolphin, which to me aren't Disney enough. I like the views of the rooms. I like the fact that you can walk down and get, you know, six different things to eat. But are there any plans to do anything with the DVC here?
Well, you know, it's Disney and it's DVC. They are always looking for ways to expand. I mean, think about it. The villas went in here, you know, and the villas went in across the way. You know, it's nowadays, if they're having any discussions, it's more about, could we do a villa, you know, that looked down actually into Epcot?
Oh, okay. So Jim and I are actually looking towards Spaceship Earth. We see it in the distance, right over the beach club. And if you guys remember the beach club and the boardwalk, there's this area between the beach club on your left and the boardwalk on your right that is essentially woods, forest.
It's
treed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you could actually put something there. That backs up to, what was that, like France back there?
Yeah, but France, again, the Morocco. Problem is that you're also looking at the back of France. In fact, you know, for example, when they opened the International Gateway here, you know, it was the first time ever that people were walking past the backside of, and it's like, this is France and this is a beige building and there is not a thing for you to see. You know, so they had to paint, they had to create windows, they had to, you know, plant stuff to hide that. And it's the same situation, that even if you would have flattened those trees, and remember also you have that very interesting road that goes,
there's a road behind it,
you know,
yeah.
So there was initially at one point the talk of literally creating a resort that would straddle,
yeah,
because, you know,
make it into a tunnel.
But, you know, it's right now, that's what people want. They want DVCs that are theme park adjacent. And, you know, we've seen, you know, the success, you know, but it took a while for Kidani Village.
Yeah.
And, you know, now we're seeing, you know, what's going on with, you know, they finally seem to have sold all of the units for
Bay Lake.
And, you know, which is why we're going ahead with the one for the Grand Flow. And, you know, before we see this one, I would bet we'll probably see the one at the Poly, you know.
Think the Poly?
Oh, you know, they've always talked about the one for the Poly.
But there's no room over there.
You know that wonderful promontory that you walk out and where they hold the weddings?
Yes. The one that's been the romantic memory spot of thousands and thousands of couples for many, now going on 40 years, Jim?
Yeah.
The one that never, ever could anyone ever possibly do anything to?
You did not hear this from me.
Okay, good. Everyone, keep this quiet. Keep this to yourselves.
You know, I mean, honestly, that this is the problem. Here's the fascinating part. This is a 28,000 square foot, you know, I mean, or square acre resort. You know, they're miles and miles and miles of turf to develop.
Not all acres are created the same, Jim.
Well, but that's the thing, that people want the view.
Yeah.
You know, they want to be near something that they like. And, you know, I mean, in fact, proximity is the whole story behind the Dolphin and the Swan.
We're walking up, by the way. We've left the boardwalk area right now. We're walking over the bridge to the Swan and the Dolphin. I think we're going to the Swan first because it's got giant birds on it.
Okay.
That would be the Swan. Oh, we have a friendship boat coming up, too. So the interesting thing about this bridge, it's one of the bridges that you run over when you when you're running the marathon,
mm-hmm.
And I always know that I'm reasonably close to getting to the end of the race when we get here. So the downside is it's one of the last hills you have to run when you run the marathon. So I'm never looking forward to that by this point, but by the same token, you kind of know that you're almost done. So that's not bad.
These are good things.
Laurel and I were watching a film on mid-century modern architecture,
mm-hmm.
And one of the interesting things that it had at the end is. It talked about how from the middle of the 20th century on, after modern architecture became postmodern, and this photographer, Julius Shulman, was talking about how after modern architecture, when postmodernism came in, everything got hideous, and they started showing photos of hideous buildings. So there's this, you know, there's this thing in Buenos Aires that looks like a waterfall that's been frozen, and there's the other you know, ugly buildings in, you know, Japan and Taiwan apparently has a lot of them. Then they flash up a picture of the Swan.
And you gotta feel for them, because again, you have to understand that this was designed to replace the incredibly blocky building that Marriott was originally proposing to build here. I mean,
yeah, to its credit, it's not a standard hotel shape.
No, not at all. And this is when Eisner began his, you know, flirtation with being an architecture patron. I mean,
yeah.
He, you know, when he was staring down the barrel of, I mean, you have to understand that this hotel, these two hotels actually were kind of a backdoor deal. The Tishman Corporation basically did the bulk of the construction on Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the guys who, you know, Tishman used their strength to get the place open in time. They kept the various unions from, you know, walking off the job. But they wanted a quid pro quo because of that. And so Ray Watson, the head of the company, said, all right, look, you can be, from this point forward, you did such a great job on Epcot, and we are talking about expanding the number of hotels we're doing at Disney. You can be our hotel people. And so, handshake deal. But anyway, now Watson, you know, but this is now 1982, becomes 83, becomes 84.
Mm-hmm.
And Watson is out as CEO, and Michael Eisner is in. And one of the very first things that Eisner does when he comes down here He's like, let me get this straight. You have only three hotels? You only have a combined, you know, 2,100 rooms on property? And you know what?
For Epcot.
Yeah. Well, no, for the whole resort. I mean, you know, the Poly, the Contemporary, and at that point, the Disney Inn only had that many hotel rooms.
Wow.
And, you know, you had 800 campsites and 400 cabins, and that's it. That's everything on Disney property. But that's because Dick Nunes had this policy of, look, you know, we make a lot of money, all right? And we have a lot of people who, you know, have little motor inns and that sort of thing around us. You know, let's be a good neighbor, all right? Let some money go on property. We make enough. And but now here comes Eisner, and it's like his job is to make money. And it's like, are you telling me, you know, we don't have this many rooms? We need hotel rooms. And they... The survey that they did suggested that Disney could easily fill the need for 20,000 more on-site hotel rooms.
20,000, and they had 2,000.
Yes.
2,100.
You know, so they reach out to Marriott. And in fact, Gary Wilson, who ended up being Disney's CFO at that point, was at Marriott. In fact, one of the reasons that he wound up at Disney is during the negotiation, Eisner was so, you know, thrilled with this guy. It's like, wow, you know, we need to get in bed with this guy. Anyway, here comes Dishman. And they learn about that Disney is in talks with Marriott. And Dishman is furious because he had a handshake deal. So he turns around and sues Disney for $1.5
billion. In 1982 dollars.
There you go.
We're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah, and so this gets Eisner's attention because it's like, you know, these guys are really fighting over this. What is this actually worth? And so, you know, they're in the negotiations with Marriott, and they go, all right, you know, if you're serious about this deal, I need some sort of a commitment. So I want you to build a $70 million addition to Epcot, sponsor pavilion. And Marriott, without breaking a sweat, says yes. Like, yes, absolutely.
$70 million.
And it's like,
on the same phone call.
And it's like, really?
70. Did we say 70?
And it was at that point they realized, okay, you know, let's... You know, and then meanwhile, they go back to Tishman. You know, they eventually figure out a way to kill and stall the Marriott deal. But they go back to Tishman. It's like, look, it's a handshake. And I'm the new CEO. And this is a nuisance lawsuit. You know, and more to the point, he's claiming that Watson gave him the right to build every hotel and property and to use the Disney name. And it's like, okay, that's not going to fly. But we will grant you, if you agree to return, you know, the rights of, you know, the theme park rights to us, we will agree to give you a one-time window, one-time opportunity. How do we get in here?
Oh, go around.
Okay.
One-time window.
One-time window. You can build a hotel and property anywhere you want. Anywhere you want. You know, if you want to literally build it right next to the Magic Kingdom, you can build it right next to the Magic Kingdom. And they actually chose this spot. They wanted to be close to Epcot because they thought newest park, that's where people want to go.
Okay.
So let's build it there. And so what ends up happening is that, and again, people are caving so easily. And Eisner's like, this is interesting. It's like, all right, you can build this, but I don't want a box. I don't want a boxy hotel. I want something special, important.
Yeah.
And this is where he reaches out to Michael Graves. And Michael Graves comes up with this idea of, you know, again, literally, the way he describes the dolphin, you know, the whole mountain shape, is it's literally a mountain rising out of the swamp of Florida. And, you know, you have these two water-based icons, because, again, it's Florida. It's a swamp.
Yeah, and you've got lakes. You had to dig lakes or canals to get enough dirt to build Epcot.
But I think what used to fascinate me when they were working on this hotel is that they weren't convinced that, for example, the paint treatments were going to work on the brick building.
Really? So we're right now, we're right between the swan and the dolphin, kind of closer to the swan, but in that sort of lobby area between both of them.
So in order to test the paint treatments, in fact, this was an interesting time to go backstage at Epcot. They took the entire backside of the Mexican pavilion and painted it like this. And so
giant waves.
Yeah, and it was just one of these things. People were just like, what the hell is this?
You know, maybe it's like, Acapulco?
You know, it's one of these things where it's like, the employees, what is this? It's like, well, it's literally, we're testing a paint treatment. And when they realized when it was that size and it actually worked, they went ahead. And, you know, construction got underway. In fact, I remember being here for the opening of MGM, where part of the press event was literally they lowered that swan into place using a crane. It's like, you know, instead of hitting the building with a, you know, a bottle of champagne, they lowered a swan.
Wow. The swans have to be 3 or 4 stories tall.
Everything here is epic and huge. But again, that's always been the constant complaint. Doesn't feel Disney. And more to the point, there's a certain amount of visual intrusion, you know, when you're in Epcot.
That's true. You can see the tops of the buildings from World Showcase.
Well, again, there used to be a joke at WDI. They were the first one to dub this resort the Turkey and the Tuna. And,
nice.
You know, and the whole notion was, in order to take away the attention, you know, it was like, okay, here's the new rule. Every pavilion at Epcot has to have a giant animal on its roof. So we'll put a panda on top of China and an eagle on top of America. And
this way, it all fits in.
You know, there's an English bulldog on top of, you know, the UK.
Mastiff.
Yeah, you know, you know, it's like, okay, whatever. But, you know, again, these were designed as business hotels. These are convention hotels.
Yeah, they are. Even the Boardwalk has a convention space. So.
No, that's it exactly. When you factor in, you've got 250,000 square feet of convention space here, but that's after, you know, various rehabs and,
right.
You know, across the way at the Yacht and Beach, you've got, 75,000?
Yeah, you've got a lot.
Now, I don't know. Over time, these hotels have kind of grown on me. But, you know, for a lot of Disney fans, they just resisted them since day one.
Well, the rooms themselves aren't bad. The, you know, the beds are comfortable. The bathrooms aren't terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I think the bathrooms could probably use some refurbishment, but, you know, overall they're not bad. Mm-hmm. And the rates, you know, are less than Disney's charging, you know, for, you know, the Boardwalk, Beach Club, or Yacht Club. I'll give them that. The one thing that I have noticed on this, the thing that drives me just bananas mm-hmm. about the Swan and the Dolphins is they will nickel and dime you to death.
Mm-hmm.
So, internet access, $10 more. Parking, $12.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every there's a fee for everything, and, you know, granted their rates are lower, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's, you know, $220 a night to stay at Yacht or Beach Club or Boardwalk or whatever, and it's $180 a night to stay at the Swan or Dolphin, and then you start adding on $25. The real difference isn't $50 or $75. The real difference is $25 to $50 a night, and is it worth that?
But again, you know, the classic case of a convention hotel.
It is, and that's what it is. It's a convention hotel, and everyone's on a business expense, so they don't. Nobody really cares,
you know. And so, you know, the sad thing is when somebody stays here and it is their money, you know, they really get bit.
Yeah, and that's. I mean, the staff are great. They're friendly. They're easy to work with. Mm-hmm. Like them a lot. It's the incidental charges that drive me up there. Laurel and I too. This is the funny thing. Laurel and I stayed here for a race one time. And our pre-race meal is ice cream and Cheetos.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and got a pint of Ben & Jerry's here each, and, you know, some Cheetos and everything. $25.
Oh, my God.
It's incredible. So now we're overlooking a model of the Swan and Dolphin.
This is the model. This is the model? In fact, you can tell because of how badly faded it is.
Oh, it's the model.
You know, this is how Graves actually sold it to Eisner. That, you know... In fact, you know, the interesting thing is that the very thing that they have to deal with this hotel every single year, you can actually see. The color choices that Graves made are just not Florida sun friendly. They're constantly trying to keep this thing looking the way he designed it.
This does actually look fairly faded. It almost looks like a desert Southwest palette.
No, that's exactly. This has been sitting here in the sun sealed in plexiglass, and so, you know, that they can't get in and fix it. But, but no, this is what got Eisner excited about architecture, and then, you know, what got fascinating is that, you know, when he came time to do, you know, Yacht and Beach and Boardwalk, he diverted away from this really, really stylized stuff that Graves does and opted to go with the warmer but yet still stylized stuff Robert M. Stern does.
Yeah.
So,
so he went from postmodern back to sort of the traditional sort of look on the...
But even then, I mean, you know, if you think about it, that you know, you've got the mid-Atlantic stylization of the Yacht and Beach Club, and in fact, that's, you know, what's funny is if you actually drill down into the literature for Boardwalk, they talk about, you know, this celebrates the Jersey Shore. And it's like, really? I have looked everywhere. I can't find Snooki. You
know? Kids these days.
You know,
kids.
It's like, Minnie, Snooki, it's the same thing.
Okay. Should we take a walk upstairs?
Sure. All right.
All right, Jim. So we're back in the lobby of the Swan. We're looking. We've got a couple of restaurants down here that are fairly interesting. We've got the Fountain, which is a really good burger place. Have you ever been there?
I remember back. Wasn't that Chubby's back in the day?
Chubby's was the wasn't it the buffet?
Ah, there you go.
That's Peekaboo right now.
Right.
You've also got Fresh down there, which is not bad actually. We've been there once for breakfast and once for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Todd English's Blue Zoo. Have you been there?
Not yet. No.
It's a Ford Diamond Award winner, AAA Ford Diamond Award winner. I've been there twice. It's not bad at all.
Well, but again,
it's actually one of the harder reservations to get for offsite restaurants. So for non-Disney restaurants,
because of course, again, this is something, you know, you want to impress your corporate clients. So you've got concierges, you know, holding back all sorts of reservations because again. Oh, I want to impress you. Let me take you to Todd English's Blue Zoo.
I really think that's what it is. If you look in the Disney reservation system, Blue Zoo is one of the restaurants that you can get on that. But traditionally, it's less available than even Le Cellier. And it's not because it's more popular.
Mm.
It's because the hotel, I think, holds back a certain number of slots for its corporate clients.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, Shula's, you know, the home of the steak that we'll get you your financial papers.
Your affairs are in order, sir, before you order?
That's right.
Yeah. You would like the macaroni and cheese with the truffle oil? And may I speak with your accountant? It's a great place. Mm-hmm. I like it quite a bit. The interesting thing with Shula's is Disney seems to be taking its cues for prices. For its steakhouses from Shula's. Because if you notice, Yachtsman now is either at parity or slightly above what Shula's charges for the same meats. Now, Yachtsman doesn't have the same sort of extensive menu as does Shula's, but for the same type of thing, for, you know, a Kansas City or a New York strip, they're virtually within a dollar of each other in terms of prices.
That is always fascinated me about you cross Disney property. And you look at a menu price, and it's like, wow, that's high, but okay. You know, again, anywhere else on the planet, it's like, are you out of your mind?
$44 for a New York strip. What?
Yeah, yeah.
I could buy a cow for that.
You know, but again, you're here, you're at Disney, and it's like, oh, well, you know, when am I going to be back here? Okay, I'll pay for that.
And again, this is the corporate place.
Yeah.
Which is really funny, because if Disney is setting its consumer prices based on the corporate cost, that's interesting. This is the interior of the Dolphin is really odd, and it's got this sort of tent on the inside lobby.
And it's been a while since they've changed out. And it used to be a much brighter, much...
It used to be more circusy themed, right?
No, that's
the blues
exactly.
And pinks and stuff.
And that's kind of muted. And to be honest, it's kind of lost something. I think what makes this hotel work is how dramatic it is, how stylized it is. And if you back away from that, that bites you in the ass. So.
Yeah, again, the hotel is great. The rooms are perfectly comfortable. Service is great here. It's missing that one sort of unifying thing, you know, that says this is who we are.
And look at the lobby. I mean, the disconnect design-wise, you know, they again, nice open, you know, traditional lobby area.
Yeah, so we're in the middle of the lobby. It's got a giant, it's got four dolphins and a fountain. It's a fairly large fountain right in the center. You guys can hear the water doing the background. And they've got this sort of blue tile, this blue six-sided tile that radiates out. So you've got about 20 feet or so between it and then, you know, a huge bunch of seating areas.
And the irony is that, you know, that you look beyond that and here's the check-in desk that could... And again, here's Eisner who fought tooth and nail because he didn't want a Marriott here. And what am I looking at? I'm looking at a Marriott check-in place.
Yeah,
I
mean, the check-in desk is really... it's sort of like some odd-shaped light fixtures. But then it's just a traditional rectangular sort of...
Yeah. I mean, nothing about it that says...
Dolphin.
You know, yeah.
That's a shame. Yeah, it's like... Oh, was that palm trees on the back of that?
I have...
Yeah,
no
they ran out of money. They were just past the... All right, let's walk back downstairs. Have you been to this bar?
Which one?
This one right here?
No.
It's the place you go before you go to Shula's.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So again, get a few drinks into you, so the menu won't hurt you.
Exactly.
It's like,
And then there's the Mandara Spa. Not actually a bad spa, but not the same level of like you know, the Ritz-Carlton spa, which is just fabulous. Have you been to that one? Have you been to the property offsite? Ritz-Carlton's over by the Rosen Center.
Yeah, yeah. No, in fact, I'm you know, I hate to say this, but when I'm over at the Rosen Center, I'm usually in the archive. You know, no, seriously, yeah. That is. You know, I mean, there are so many people who've worked on this resort or Universal who've donated their papers over there.
Oh,
it's
that's
like,
right. Yeah,
it's
you're
like,
saying.
Oh, that's where the bodies are buried. So, I might need a spa treatment after burrowing through, you know, all of those file boxes over there. But no, killer, killer, killer stuff. You get tired of hearing me tell stories. Go there.
All right, we're gonna go out the revolving door here, and we're gonna head back over towards the yacht and beach club. So we'll do that little walk. It's nice. All right, here we go through the revolving door, kids. And it's spinning. It's spinning. It's spinning. There's Jim's feet that are shuffling. All right. Now we've got a large fountain. Is it raining? Ah, it's raining. We're gonna get wet. Yeah, let's get wet.
That's okay.
That's fine. We'll get wet.
It's Florida. You're supposed to get wet.
It's true. It's kind of funny because the cloud is like right above us. Yeah, whatever.
So anyway, this opens up, what is it? January 1st, 1990. And then I think the Swan opens first, followed by the Dolphin 6 months later.
Okay.
And... But again, there's this whole weird build going on at the same time. I mean, you have to understand that...
1990, so it's right after the studios opens.
And, you know, of course, before that is Caribbean Beach, which was, you know, their first attempt at doing a moderate resort.
Yep.
And, I mean, what's fascinating is that when you honestly think about the amount of building that's been done around here, and if you take the more relaxed version of what the Epcot resorts are, if you fold in... You know, Caribbean Beach, and you fold in Pop Century and the soon-to-open animation.
Old Key West.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about 10,000 hotel rooms that went in a 25-year period, just in, you know, this small area of the resort. But again, because people want to be near the theme parks.
Yep,
and
true.
You know, and it's just now weird seeing this same strategy being played out over at the Magic Kingdom.
So. Where they want to do DVCs.
Yep.
Oh, that's great.
So
we're walking back through the backside of the Dolphin right now in the sort of U-shaped courtyard adjacent to the lobby that sort of faces between the Swan and the Boardwalk. This is actually a nice area. I wonder why they didn't just continue this like a bridge all the way through. Because they make you walk in the U-shape. It's not the most efficient way to walk.
Again, there's nothing about the design of this that's efficient.
Yeah, that's right.
It's interesting looking out, you know, again, the body of water that's between the Boardwalk Inn and the Yacht and Beach.
Crescent Lake?
Yep. You know how there is for the Magic Kingdom resorts. They have their nighttime water pageant. They were supposed to have the equivalent here.
Really?
Yep. Eisner, you know, some of these things, he was watching the electrical water pageant one night from the flow. And it's like, oh, we should get one of those for Epcot. And it was like, then he got it in his head because they were in the middle of negotiating with Andrew Lloyd Webber to do Evita for Hollywood Pictures. And it's like, oh, let's get him to do the music.
For the music for the whatever the I thought you were saying they were going to do Evita on the water over here.
No.
I was like, I don't see that, but okay.
No. But again, you got to remember, this is Andrew Lloyd Webber, the guy who did Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, right.
So what Eisner comes up with is Noah. And
right.
The idea is literally that you know, what had happened is that a float unit would come through and literally an ark would rise up out of the water. You know, again, made out of neon that sort of folded itself into place. And then you'd have these individual boats that would be two animals that would go into the ark. And it was, you know, with all of this Andrew Lloyd Webber music, and it was, and everyone, you know, signed off on it. And they figured out, okay, well, we're going to need to put a boat structure here to hide it. And, you know, what times of night can we do it? And, you know, how many floats do we need? How many animals? How long would the music have to be? And so Andrew Lloyd Webber works up, you know, a track for the thing. And they're literally, everyone's in one room on a Monday morning, you know, for the, we're all going to sign off on this. Everyone likes it. We're going to sign this. We're going to do this. And as often happens with Michael Eisner, you know, he comes into the room and it's like, oh, this weekend, my wife, Jane, and I went to a horse show and it was amazing. And the animals were so beautiful. And, it's, you know, I think we should do the water show on Crescent Lake about horses. It's like, you know, Lord Number's kind of, you know, blinking at him, like, you know, again, because he's, you know, it's one of these things. We need 22 minutes of music. And it's literally come up with 22 minutes of music that's keyed to different animal themes. And
to,
it's just,
to the Bible story of Noah.
And it's like...
Horses are where it's at now.
Yeah, and it's like... And so that died a dog's death. And the interesting thing is Equestria actually went forward for a couple of weeks before, again, I don't know, you know, Eisner came into the room and was distracted by a large penny or something like that. And, you know, that project never went forward.
So they never decided to do the Ark thing, but it's still there somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, it's on file. And, in fact, they have, you know, they've at least got the temp track that Weber put together.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, but, again, when you look at the space here, you could see how, okay, so you do it, you know, out there between the two hotels. Something people could watch at night, and likewise here, then just drop it in between.
Oh, yeah, all I like to do is get underneath this bridge, which if you need to change the bridge, you can change the bridge.
Mm-hmm. So, but that was the whole point, that they had to be, you know, on barges that were flat enough to get underneath these two things and then fold up into the structure of the Ark.
Got it.
But again, you could do that with, you know, what was it? They actually used a lot of the R&D that had been done for Spectral Magic. There's...
Oh, with the folding Maleficent and...
Well, more to the point that they had, there's a bunch of luminescent pieces of plastic there that, you know, that again, when you run power through them, suddenly, you know, become, you know, vibrant. And that was the whole notion of, well, let's build it out of this luminescent plastic. And when we kick the power on, suddenly, hey, look at this. So.
Oh, great idea. All right, we're coming up to the Yacht Club now. We're about 20 feet away from the start of the wooden pier area that surrounds the lake, and we're coming up on the first of the gray three-story buildings that represent the Yacht Club. Jim, have you stayed at the Yacht Club recently?
Yep. I have to admit, it's fascinating that these, let's be honest here, this is one large hotel.
It is.
You know, but at the same time, because of the design choices, the paint treatments, I mean, this is a much more formal hotel. This is, you know, old wood, you know,
right.
You just get that sense of, you know, a period in time. Whereas, you know, you head across to the beach, and it's lighter, it's easier, it's fun. So, you know, but same building.
The interesting thing to me is the Yacht Club icon is the lighthouse that we've got, which is the docking point for the Friendship boats. Mm-hmm. The icon for the beach club is the wrecked pirate ship, which is, like you said, it's a water slide. It's definitely, it's more fun. I mean, this is a lighthouse, right?
Yep.
It's a big structure. It's imposing. It's, you know, safety. It's some sort of, like, you know, it's a serious icon. And then you've got a wrecked ship that we've turned into a water slide. Woo! You know, it's exactly right. The, you know, one is fun and one is not.
Well, the other thing, it goes a little deeper than that. There's actually a story that the Imagineers came up with to the effect of the light failed, which is why the boat drove into...
Really?
You know, the one night the light failed.
Ah, that makes sense.
So,
yacht and beach. I get it. That's nice. It looks like they're doing a little bit of construction over here. Some maintenance work on some of the windows outside the yacht and the beach club. Yeah, these are traditionally. So these are nice rooms.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like them a little bit more than I like the boardwalk. Definitely a little bit more than I like the Swan and the Dolphin. But traditionally, these are the resorts that fill up last for Disney in the deluxe category. They're the ones that typically if you need occupancy last minute, even on a busy weekend like this, where this weekend there was the NBA All-Star Game in Orlando, it was the end of President's Day week, there's a lot of stuff going on. Even still, there were rooms available at the beach club.
And yet, what's kind of fascinating about this is guest relations knows this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because this always tends to be a slightly under-occupied hotel, if they're bringing celebrities to property, this is where they put them.
Because there are fewer people?
Yeah, I mean, it's the notion of it's smaller, it's low-key. More to the point, there's enough sort of nooks and crannies that if you have somebody high-profile that you're trying to get into the building that you don't want people know it, you know, they're in the building. You know, you can drive them around back, or you can take them to, you know, you know, the loading dock and bring them up a corridor that away. But yeah, I mean, if I hate to say this, but you know, for example, something like Super Soap Weekend, mm-hmm. this is where they hide them.
Really?
In fact, that was always kind of, you know, the hotel would always get a little, it's Super Soap. Which means the fans that actually knew that they were here, you know, would stake out the lobby, you know, or wander the corridor.
Susan Lucci!
You know. So.
That's nice.
We're coming up on my favorite pool in all of Walt Disney World property right here.
Oh, the
Stormalong Bay.
Oh, yes.
It's the... It was funny because normally when I compare hotels mm-hmm. in Orlando, anybody that has any sort of pool complex, mm-hmm. you tend to... If they're ambitious about it, if they mm-hmm. look like they've really put thought into the pool complex, you compare it to this. Have you been over to the Hilton Bonnet Creek?
My dear.
They have a 3-acre lazy river pool complex that mm-hmm. I would say almost rivals this. I don't think it's quite as good as this, mm-hmm. but it's definitely number two in the Orlando area.
Now, they still have the sandy bottom.
Yes.
There.
Yes.
I get for so... Why is it that...
It's like 9 feet deep, too.
Why is it that that makes this so much more pleasant? I don't understand that.
Well, it's also 9 feet deep in some spots, too, or 8 feet deep right. in some spots, which, okay. you know, it's not the traditional, we're going to go to 6 feet. I mean, 9 feet deep, you can dive down pretty deep. Mm-hmm. You can pretend like you're a porpoise and stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. The flip side of this is because it's such a wonderful pool, they have to spend so much time policing who's getting into.
Oh yeah, you have to get a towel. You've got to show ID.
Yeah,
it's like I don't want a Bud Light. I want a towel.
But again, that the word has gotten out. This is the place you want to go to.
Yeah, it's great. In fact, one of the reasons why I would stay here mm-hmm. is if I was bringing down Hannah mm-hmm. and she wanted to go swimming, would you know, the pool here would be the tiebreaker among, like, you know, Animal Kingdom Lodge or something like that.
Very cool. Anyway, we're coming up on the beach side, which, oddly enough, out of all the hotels, this is where Eisner liked to stay on property.
I like the Beach Club a lot.
Yeah. Though what was funny is that because it was Eisner's choice hotel,
mm-hmm.
And again, I don't mean to keep picking on Eisner, but he was kind of a peculiar guy. That, for example, once he finished the check-in process, the rule with the staff was don't make eye contact, literally, and you know,
don't look him in the eye.
Yeah, just the idea that don't address him, don't make eye contact. You know, he's here working. You know, he doesn't want to deal. And again, he's here working. He doesn't want to deal with the cast members.
He's here working. He doesn't want to deal with the employees.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I got it.
So, but what got funny is that he literally had a hotel room that was on the second floor that would overlook the lobby. And after a couple times where he'd come through and he'd literally find things to complain about in just the short journey to his room, they got smart, and they would literally, okay, Eisner's coming in this week, they'd replace the carpet on the exact path that he was going to his room.
No, Mr. Eisner, you must not go left, you must go right.
No, this is exactly. And they'd paint just in the path where he was going to his room. So it was literally, you know, they did the Potemkin Village, you know, just...
We're painting all the trees green.
Yeah, you know, and so just to get him to his room, and, you know, because again, he would follow the same path, he'd eat the same breakfast. You know, very, very, very much a creature of habit.
Oh, that's funny.
So,
that's great. Have you been to the inside the Beach Club recently?
Not recently, no.
Oh, so let's wander inside real quick.
Okay.
We've got time.
I actually got married here.
You got married at the Beach Club?
Yes.
Which time? That's not a joke. I'm just asking.
No, again, first and only so far. You know, not for lack of trying with dancing. but no, we got in fact, again, to give Michelle credit, she knew these hotels inside and out. And we were among the first of the Disney intimate weddings.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, literally, that, you know, we came in, this is, I want to say, 92, mm-hmm. Fall of 92, and said, look, we're grown-ups, all right? We don't need characters, you know, and we're going to have a relatively small, you know, group of family coming down for this. But we like to get married on property. We like... You know, the Beach Club. And it's like, well, where would you get married over there? And it's like, well, have you seen the courtyards? And it's like, what courtyards? And so we take our Disney wedding planner over.
To right here?
And, well, no, there's actually...
Oh, the courtyard in the middle. Yeah,
there's great little courtyards.
Yeah, that's right here.
And so, you know, literally, you bring the woman there, and we are in there 30 seconds, and she's whipped out her cell phone. It's like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Courtyard over the beach. Have you seen this?
And, whip me up a flyer.
You know, and long story short, we have... when we have our wedding here, and it's a lovely little intimate affair. It's us and 30 guests. There are 40 Disney managers. All right. Who are watching this, taking notes, because we went and we had...
Groom stands northwest.
Yeah, just the on the other side here, the bar on the other side of Cape May is where we had our reception and meal. And they were like, oh my God, we can, you know, we can do adult weddings and, you know, little teeny tiny adult weddings. And, you know.
And now they do it.
Well, and again, that's always been a sore point with my ex. It's sort of like, we shouldn't have gotten a cut.
All I wanted was 5%.
You know, but...
That's right.
So
we're in the lobby right now of the beach club. We're walking up towards the marketplace. We're going to go to the... There's some really big radio set here. We're going to go this way to the right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, see, you see your point, Jimmy. There's a... We're seeing the courtyard. It's a lovely little courtyard. So. How'd you get back there? Through the...
No, we're just over here. I'll take it. Follow
me. Good. Oh, Jim is walking us to the place where he got married.
That's right.
Married.
You know, every so often, the exorcist has to come in here and perform a ceremony.
Huh. Good. Strange. A shaman?
It didn't work. It's a doom space. Bring me the chicken. Fine. I shouldn't say that. I have a lovely daughter. Did I mention I have a lovely daughter?
You did.
Who's about to turn 18.
18. Congratulations. So. She was my fallback person when I went out to Compton. She was the person I was going to call if I got into trouble.
Bad choice.
We're walking past the store at the beach club now.
So again, we bring, you know, the woman from the Disney weddings over to this space, and meet it when you walk out. You can see that, you know, it was never designed to be anything other
than a courtyard.
That's sort of a, you know, breezeway courtyard. But they're like, oh my God, the bride can come in that way, and the guests can come in here, and we can put the harp in.
Yeah, this is nice. So we're surrounded by four stories. We're in the courtyard. This is the larger of the two courtyards. So it's roughly a rectangular space with sort of many squares on either end. But it's lovely. It's got two lights. You've got balconies, mini balconies.
It's a great space, and they continue to use it to this day. In fact, yeah, the irony is that going forward, as part of the Disney wedding program, you know, whenever they're building a new hotel, it's like, show us all of your blueprints. You know, just,
where's the courtyard? Where's the bride coming out?
That's exactly.
Where are the guests coming in?
You know, because we're anticipating, you know, for a number of these guests, this, you know, they'll form an emotional attachment to a hotel. They'll want to get married there. And it's like, where are the spaces?
That's so great. This is really nice. They've got plants lining out
the
side.
No, this is exactly how it was, you know. And
this is great.
So.
Oh, good choice.
Well, again, just... Would have been a better choice if the wedding had lasted.
You're fine.
What am I saying?
You're human.
Yep. So.
Okay. Let's continue walking. Let's walk back to the lobby, and then we'll do the walk to Epcot. The one thing that I find confusing about this resort is because of its shape and the number of wings that it has, between it and the yacht club, finding your room sometimes is difficult. Not as difficult as Boardwalk Villas, where it really is like the hotel from The Shining there sometimes.
Actually, I was here for the Give a Day, Get a Day press event. The Disney was nice enough to comp me a room that literally was at the very last room.
The last room, yeah.
On the second floor. And it's a nice little room. So I open the balcony, and the thing of it is that the balcony runs 30 feet. I mean, again...
It's bigger than your room?
Well, yeah, and in fact, it was one of these things where it's, and it looked out directly on Epcot, and I kept thinking, if you had friends and family who loved Illuminations, this literally was the room, because you could, you know, literally set up food and drink inside, and it's like, okay, it's Illuminations time.
That's all good.
All 30 of us move out on the balcony, and just this absolutely amazing view.
Wow.
But anyway, Eisner's room just up along the balcony, literally, again. There.
So he'd walk up these stairs, he'd go to the left.
That's exactly, man. You don't have the carpet over there, you don't have to paint over there, he always goes this way.
That's hysterical.
So.
I'm picking up a lot of interference here. I think it's probably from the guest Wi-Fi, or somebody's operating a microwave right near us.
There you go.
Oh, and then it's gone. It's gotta be the guest Wi-Fi. So that's funny. So Eisner would stay on the second floor.
Yep.
So he'd overlook the lobby. I didn't realize that there were rooms overlooking the lobby there. That's interesting.
Well, you know, again, it just, he wanted to be in the center of action, but at the same time, he wanted people to leave him alone.
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Again, you have to understand, Michael Eisner's favorite film out of all the movies they made at Disney, Hunchback of Notre Dame. Misunderstood creature living high, looking down on the people. Okay, you know.
Wow.
Somewhere there's a psychiatry student that'll figure this out. All right, but again, very complex man. So.
That's great. So we're walking back out of the back of the beach club. We're going to make a left and head towards Epcot before we wrap this up. Has anybody ever used this this beach volleyball court that's over there?
You know, every so often you'd see, you know, when Disney was looking to sort of give the impression that people actually did these sorts of things,
mm-hmm.
you literally, it's like, set up for volleyball, here's a camera crew, which meant you knew that this game was only being played once in front of the cameras, and then they pull it down.
Yeah.
You know, because, of course, it's, you're not playing volleyball to play volleyball, you're playing volleyball to show that the boardwalk is across the street.
Ah, got it.
But now, it's mostly used for, you know, you'll come here for the movie schedule, the inflatable screen.
That's right. So at night, right behind the beach club, they'll erect a small movie screen and they'll show movies, you know, weather permitting and everything, right on the beach. But during the day, they've got a number of seats out overlooking sort of the lake. There's literally not a single person in any of the chairs. And, you know, maybe it's because it just rained for a little bit, but I think
every seagull known to man.
Yeah, the seagulls outnumber the people by about a bajillion to zero. This really is a nice resort. So we got the quiet pool coming up over here. It's good.
No.
And the beach club, this side over here, is the villas, right?
Yep.
Actually a pretty good... for being as close to Epcot as it is, it's remarkably quiet, some of these rooms.
Oh, no, absolutely.
The woods-facing rooms?
Absolutely. But again, the only... again, having stayed here for the Give-A-Day event, when Illuminations finally does go off, it's like, whoa!
Let's not talk like this.
Oh, my God. It's like, please come out from under the bed. All right. They have not just blown up the theme park. That's just fireworks.
Wow.
So,
yeah, it's true. I guess on this side, you're going to hear Illuminations every night. I like Illuminations, though. And actually, are there rooms that are closer? Are those rooms of the boardwalk closer than these rooms of the beach club?
Well, but again, here...
Oh, that's a restaurant space.
Right.
Oh, yeah, never mind. So that's just facade. Oh, so these rooms actually are closer.
Yep. And more to the point, they actually allow you to look into the park without looking back down on the dumpster.
Ah. So. Nice.
The non-dumpster view, please.
That's great. So. All right, good. Well, that wraps up our Epcot Resorts podcast. Do you have any closing thoughts on this?
Well, actually, we can pick up... if you wander into the lobby of the boardwalk,
mm-hmm.
Boardwalk Inn, you come in and there's a miniature carousel there.
That's right, the story. Okay, tell the story. This is great.
Okay. This is M.C. Illion, Marcus Illion, who was the famous carousel builder based out of Coney Island. And he was a master of it. I mean, for example, you could always tell a horse that he sculpted, for example, because the tail was, you know, it literally looked like it was flying in the breeze. And the mane, you know, individual hair-shaped, they were amazing coasters, carousels. Problem is, again, when you're selling carousels... You can't take a full carousel on the road.
Yeah. There's no show prop that you bring with you,
there
right?
There you go. So he actually had made a miniature carousel that he would take with him everywhere as he was, you know, selling carousels to various amusement parks and that sort of thing. Anyway, we jump ahead to the early 1990s because, again, Marcus worked mostly in the 1920s, passed away in the 40s or thereabouts. Anyway, they're looking to decorate the boardwalk in, give the lobby something really special. And what they end up doing is they find Marcus's travel model. But, you know, it's in really sorry shape. It's been sitting, gathering dust forever. And a friend of mine, Justin Jorgensen, who was working in Imagineering, he ended up in charge of the restoration project. And this is, I want to say, 80 horses plus carriages.
Yeah, I mean, the carousel, we saw the model of it. It's about 6 feet wide. Oh, I mean, it's big. You're not carrying this by yourself. It's big, and it's detailed, too.
Yep. So anyway, he's working on it, and he's painted the horses individually, and if you look carefully on the thing, you can actually find little hidden Mickeys that he put in there. And in fact, some of them, they're beyond obscure. There's little... Literally hidden Mickeys under the horses' hooves on the bottom of their feet.
And why did he do that?
Well, he had been tasked by John Hench to make this thing look better than it had when Illions himself was bringing it around the world, you know, showing this off. So anyway, putting the finishing touches on the thing, and John Hench looks at it and actually gets down on one knee and looks up, and it's like, you haven't painted the ceilings. And it's like, John, I've been restoring the horses. You know, I've been restoring the carousel. I've been restoring the gearwork. What, do you want me to paint the horses? I said, yeah, well, you know, he would have, if a full-size, you know, carousel had been built, you know, they would have painted the ceilings. It's all right, fine. What would be up there? It's like cherubs.
Cherubs, of course, cherubs.
Okay, so, all right. And so Justin is like, well, cherubs. Who do I know who's a baby? And he picks up the phone and he calls myself and Michelle. And we had just literally had Alice. It's like, explains the situation. It's like, look, can you send me pictures of your daughter?
I need cherubs.
So we send him a handful of photographs. And 3 years later, we go to the grand opening ceremony of the hotel. And he's literally, he's like, come here. And we kneel down to the poof and look up. And here's my daughter as an angel. In fact, if you, again, you get on the poof in that hotel and get on any and look up into the carousel,
right,
on the ceilings over the horses, the little girl, well, the angel there is my daughter Alice when she was about a year, year and a half.
Oh, that's great.
And it's just funny because seeing these pictures, again, I know these pictures, and seeing them out of context, I mean, for example, there's one where my daughter had gotten into a box full of Dunkin' Munchkins.
The donut holes.
And literally was holding one over her head in triumph as in, I have defeated the adults. I have gotten the munchkins. And this is the one he chose to paint. You know, so it's like my daughter with wings and a triumphant arm. It's like, well, it's Mission the Munchkin. But it's like, it's a very nice likeness. But again, that's another reason why this resort really does occupy a very, you know, very close spot in my heart here that... Because, again, every time I come here, I visit my daughter.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Jim was nice enough to show us the cherubs on the inside. If you guys get a chance, when you walk in the lobby of the boardwalk, it's the carousel right there on the right-hand side of the lobby. Go take a look. You have to kind of kneel down and look up into it, but it's definitely there. All right, well, this has been the Epcot Resort Podcast with Len Testa and Jim Hill. Jim, thanks for coming, as always. And we'll see you guys on the next show.
Stupid Judy, stupid energy.
This has been a production of Mouse World Radio.
This podcast is sponsored by AAA, the American Automobile Association. AAA members get discounts on tickets, resort accommodations, and more at Walt Disney World and other Orlando attractions. If you book a qualifying Walt Disney World resort vacation package at select AAA offices, you'll receive a free subscription to touringplans.com and dedicated trip planning resources just for AAA clients. Go to AAA.com or ask your local AAA travel agent for more details on this offer.